Applying to USC Marshall? Don't be rigid, boring, or tedious. An interview with Kelly Scott. Welcome to the 255th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. This podcast is brought to you by tomorrow's webinar, Get Accepted to Top MBA Programs with Low Stats, which I will present tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, and at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. The MBA application process is challenging enough, but if you are also struggling with a low GPA or test score, come to the webinar to learn about steps you can take to mitigate the impact of those numbers. The webinar is free, but you do need to register. You can do so at accepted.com/getMBA. Again, that URL, accepted.com/getMBA. We'll also link to the registration page from the show notes at accepted.com/255. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to Admissions Straight Talk, Kelly Scott. Now, this is Kelly's first time on Admissions Straight Talk. However, she is no stranger to Accepted, having participated in our old online chats. Kelly earned her bachelor's in business at the University of Miami and then worked in business for companies like Unilever and Ernst & Young. Then she became a Trojan through and through, joining the Marshall admissions team in 2001. She also earned her MBA at USC. In addition to her duties as Senior Associate Director at Marshall, she has served on the boards of the Forte Foundation and the Consortium for Graduate Study and Management. Kelly, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. So happy to have you.
Okay.
For you to have me, actually. That's
okay.
A better way to say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm pleased to have you join me today. How's that? Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Now, can you give us an overview of the USC Marshall full-time MBA program for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it and focus on the more distinctive elements? I mean, all MBA programs teach accounting and finance and economics, but what are some of the more distinctive features?
Oh, it would be my pleasure to talk about Marshall. So okay. One of the things I'm sure most folks would know, we are located in Los Angeles, a wonderful city with a lot of commerce. And of course, as you said, we have a lot of similarities to a lot of programs out there. But I think one of the things or several things that makes Marshall really distinct from other programs is first, let me talk a little bit about the flexibility of the program. It's one of those programs where you can basically make your own MBA. So we will start our students out with a pretty tight core, but you actually start taking electives pretty early on in the process, and it allows you to get not only just a depth of knowledge, but a much bigger breadth of knowledge. And we also allow you to take classes outside of Marshall. And also, we're one of the few schools left in the nation that has communications as part of the core. So this is one of the things that we feel is very, very critical to MBA skills, because no matter what your knowledge is and your expertise, if you're not able to convey your ideas, if you're not able to influence others on how you communicate, very good ideas may stay on the table because of that. So we think that is still very, very important in the MBA process.
I believe GMAC data very much supports that as a real distinguisher. Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, the Bloomberg Businessweek Job Skills Report named us the school that consulting companies love to come to because of our communication skills of our students. So we really believe it's definitely important and it will remain part of the core for us.
Okay.
Yeah. Some other things that I think are very important is, first of all, we were the first school to require international travel as part of the core. And at USC, it is actually a required part of the core for all of our MBA programs. So everyone at Marshall will need a passport because you would definitely go overseas as part of our program. And then there's a couple of other things. We have a very full, extensive case competition program, which is great because even if you're not going into consulting, it's a great way for students to you know, kind of enhance their leadership skills and get their critical thinking skills in line. And one of the good things about it is it allows you to apply the things that you're learning very quickly, because that's really kind of the focus of our learning is experiential learning, so that students can apply very quickly everything that they learn. And the last thing I'll just mention really briefly is that we are the only school that presents at the annual Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Board, which is overseas. And basically, our students are given another major project in which to present to the CEOs of APAC every year. And we're the only MBA program allowed to present there. So those are some things I think are unique to Marshall.
Right. Well, I know about its strength on the Pacific Rim. Actually, when I think of Marshall's strength, I think of entrepreneurship, media and entertainment, global business, especially on the Pacific Rim, which you've touched on. What else should I be thinking of and why? Now, you mentioned communications and consulting. Is there anything else I should be thinking of? Or
yeah, Linda, you know, one of the things that I think it's missed in our program from other folks is how strong we are in technology. Okay. So we have a very high, very active technology club, and our students, of course, have been getting hired in many of those industries to the point where it is now second to consulting for MBA hires. And one of the things in technology, you know, being here in Los Angeles, where we have what we like to call Silicon Beach, where a lot of the tech companies are, we have a very tight and very strong startup culture, which is really very important to a lot of MBAs. And one of the things that's actually branched out is gaming. We are seeing a growth in the interest in gaming, and we're seeing a growth in that industry. And it's grown here at Marshall to the point where our gaming club actually was created as an offshoot of our tech club because there were so many people interested in gaming. So that's actually very, very strong for us on top of the consulting that we have. And then the last piece is business analytics. We were one of the first schools to add business analytics to our core, and we also have a new Master's of Science program in business analytics where our MBA students can take those classes as electives. So it's another area.
So can MBA students concentrate in analytics if they so choose?
Yes, they can. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Now, USC, kind of stepping back, that was a great introduction, but I was in preparing for the call, I saw that USC Marshall states it has four core values, and there are transformational courage, collaborative ambition, impactful service, and unwavering integrity. How do those values influence admissions decisions? So I'm kind of going in a different direction entirely right now.
Absolutely. Well, I will say this. The wonderful thing about those values is that they actually came from our students. Our students had gotten together a couple years ago and decided we really want to focus on what are the true values of Marshall. We want to embody them, and we want to make sure that classes behind us can look at those values and know that this is what Marshall is all about. So as we are looking at applications in the admissions process, you know, we look at them in several different ways. For instance, in transformational courage, for instance, we're looking for people who are looking to transform, and they show that they find ways to stretch themselves. They are constantly learning. They may be taking extra classes. They're taking initiative to develop themselves and be part of organizations that help them with that development. And then on the collaboration piece, collaborative ambition, we're definitely looking for teamwork. Marshall is a very teamwork-oriented school. We're a very network-oriented school. And we want to get people who show that they not only help themselves improve, but they're helping other people improve as well. The impactful service piece talks about how do you serve and how do you impact your community. And it doesn't just mean your work community. It includes volunteerism. It includes your family community. It even includes your social community. How do you show that in an application through things that you've done, through kind of organizations that you've been a part of, and how did you leave it better than what it was from when you came? So those are some things we're going to look in the application process for students who apply. And then, of course, unwavering integrity. You know, we want to see a demonstration of accountability. Students who know, you know, if there's something good that happens, do you share your success with other people? Do you take accountable for any failures that are in there? We ask the question so that we can get kind of a breadth of different experiences, and we hope that in the application process, our students can kind of show us that I have taken accountability for these actions, good or bad, because I believe in the integrity of the process. So those are kind of how we will look at that in the application process. And it comes out a lot in the interview process more so, and of course in the essay process as well.
Yeah, I would assume it comes out in both those places, and to a certain extent, frankly, in the resume. You know, I thought you were going to tell me that transformational courage is the courage basically to initiate. But it seems to me like you're focusing it much more on the courage to transform yourself and personal growth.
It's personal growth, but how that transformation affects others is still going to be part of the process, and we're going to be looking at some of those things in that application.
Right, and that maybe my understanding is more what the collaborative ambition is about. You know,
exactly.
Thank you for really going into that. That was very interesting. I was looking at another school that will remain nameless site, and they had something about their mission statement and, you know, four critical values, and they were not very comprehensible. Let's just leave it at that. Okay. This is clear. And this is my opinion will be both a guide for applicant students, graduates, and admissions offices.
And, you know, I will tell you, an incoming student will not miss those values, because when they walk into the first floor of Popovich Hall, which happens to have four pillars, you will actually find each of these values on one of the pillars and in the first floor, very well advertised right there on the first floor. So you'll always be reminded of the Marshall values as a student.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the essays a second ago. What advice do you have for applicants preparing to respond to Marshall's essay questions? I think you still have a round of applications ongoing.
We do. Yes, absolutely. Well, the first thing, I've actually kind of coined my own little theory, and I call it the robot theory.
Yeah.
So I ask students not to be rigid, boring, or tedious in their application. So what happens sometimes is, you know, applicants like to answer the question on what they think we want to hear, and I'm sure many admissions officers will say the same, instead of really, giving themselves the license to be a little bit more creative, to talk about something that maybe we won't find in other parts of their application. You know, our essay, of course, is designed to first help us understand where you're trying to go in this process, which is usually that first question about your short-term or long-term goals.
Right.
But now but the other question institutes a set of choices, so you can choose one of the four questions. And we're hoping that these questions allow you to kind of pick one, or you can tell us something about yourself that we may not find out in other pieces of your application. And I can say this, I'm very surprised the number of people who still kind of want to speak to how they feel they'll be a great student at Marshall. And we hope that everyone's going to be a great student at Marshall. But I personally, we'd like to see some more people answer at least one of the other three questions, just to see if they want to think creatively, if there's other things in their life that they're passionate about outside of just focusing on this application itself.
Right. You'd like to, like you say, don't be rigid, boring, or tedious. So that's, by the way, that could be great advice for life too, especially in communications.
Yes. And we also would look for a little bit more depth to the answers as well. It's also actually better to kind of focus on one, just figure out what your primary topic is going to be and focus on that versus trying to fit in everything you can think of into this one essay. I mean, the length is relatively limited, so it's better to have depth into one good topic versus just surface information on several topics.
It's interesting what you're saying. My mother is a Holocaust survivor, and she started speaking about her wartime experiences very recently, even though she's started this career at age 88. And I accompanied her yesterday, and obviously I've heard her story before, But it was interesting watching the audience react. Obviously, they haven't been hearing it all their lives. And there were two points where the audience gasped. You know, there were about 50 people there. And each one involved either a very short piece of information about a picture, but it was a very small piece of information, and it wasn't a particularly dramatic in some respects story. And the other one was a very short detail. But it wasn't the grand scheme of things. It was the vignette. It was
that could be very powerful.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, the vignette is much more powerful than just little bits and pieces.
So she spoke about a half hour. And again, people were very attentive. And like most survivors, she has quite a story. But it was those two instances that really caused many, there were about 50 people in the room, as I said, caused them to gasp.
Wow.
You know. I'm not going to go into it because it would take away from you. We want to learn about USC Marshall right now, not my mother. But it's the vignette. It's the use of a story and an incident and a moment that can be far more powerful and telling, revealing, than a grand summary.
Well, Linda, I can give you a quick example.
Sure, I'd love an example.
A few years ago, I read one of the best essays I think I ever read was a young man talked about fly fishing with his father. Hmm. Now, what little I knew of fly fishing, I was thinking this is going to be a robot essay. I thought it was going to be rigid, boring, and tedious. But as this young man talked about why he fly fishes with his father and the time that they can have together and how the influence kind of helped him even start framing his career goals and the things that he wanted to do in life. The essay was really well written. It was really riveting. And at the end, I just felt like I knew so much more about this candidate and his motivations. And so it actually even surprised me because as I told my colleagues about it, I said, I actually passed it to my colleagues so they can all read it as well and say, this is about fly fishing, but this is going to surprise you. And it was really, really very well done. So that one always sticks out in my mind as a great, great essay and a great example of finding something that may seem mundane to others, but can be really powerful and really impactful.
And authentic.
And authentic, really. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Along the same lines, I remember an essay was one of my first clients. So we're talking a good 20 plus years ago. He wrote about his love of jazz. He was actually applying to law school. And the communicative power of jazz. And I still remember it.
That's awesome.
20 something years later. And I have read a lot of essays. Okay.
I can imagine.
I'm sure you have too. And if we're talking years later about an essay, it had some power. Whether it's the fly fishing one or this one, or I remember a passage where one client was writing about collecting butterflies. I mean, that could sound pretty boring, really. But he said that when he went to interview, that was the passage that everybody was asking him about.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody has to start fly fishing, collecting butterflies, or listening to jazz.
But absolutely. Absolutely. It's like, don't be afraid to talk about something that you're passionate about, because what you'll find out is if you're passionate about it, you put that effort into it and you bring it to life. You're gonna write about something like that in a much better way than something where you're trying to fit into what you think an admissions officer wants to hear.
Absolutely.
As you say, you pointed out the word authentic. I mean, really, we say it a lot. I know that we say it a lot in recruiting, but I really want the candidates to hear that authenticity really stands out in the application process.
Absolutely. Now, I think some of what we've been talking about will probably answer my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Okay. Marshall accepts last year accepted just under 30% of its applicants, which means it rejected just over 70% of applicants. Mm-hmm. Who gets the interview invitations? And from those invited to interview, who gets accepted? In a nutshell, how do you filter through that mass of applications? So some of it's authenticity, but go on.
Well, I'll tell you, Linda, the interview process is probably our favorite over here at Marshall because we love to talk to people. We love to get to know you because, you know, we do realize not everyone is going to be at a certain level of writing, let's say. And we know sometimes it's really hard to convey who you are on a two-dimensional piece of paper. Yes. So that interview really is that place where you just wow us over, or it sometimes we'll have a person who's great on paper and not so great in the interview. So there's different ways that interview can be a primary influence on whether or not you're admitted or not. So with that, I would say we interview a little over 40% of the applicant pool, sometimes close to 50% of the applicant pool, because we really want to make sure that we're not missing any candidates that, again, may not have put their best foot forward on a piece of paper, but we see something in there that could be brought out in an interview. So we do about 40% to 50% of the application. Now, I will tell you, winnowing it down is really, really tough because I, at this point in time, you know, when I started in this business over 16 years ago, you would kind of see a bigger difference between who's really prepared, who's not prepared. You know, you can tell kind of where candidates are in the process. But over time, candidates are getting more sophisticated. They're preparing better. With all the information we're putting out there, they're doing it. They're using it, and they're getting so much better that, you know, I can tell you, Linda, I have so many fantastic interviews. We just don't know where to begin when we're trying to winnow it down to the admissions decision. It can be very, very tough. So we will still look at a lot of different things, but I will say this for sure. We have definitely had candidates who, I will just say, they bombed the interview. And on paper, they look great. They bombed the interview. They probably were not admitted. But then we've had those candidates who have been borderline, maybe not the greatest on paper, and they've come in and they wowed us, and they ended up getting the admissions to the program. So it can be, in a way, a little bit of a make or break piece as part of the application.
Yeah, for sure. What can those invited to interview at Marshall expect on interview day?
You know what they can expect, Linda? What we're having here, a conversation.
Okay.
Absolute a conversation. Of course, we want you to be prepared and know your story, right? You should be able to know your story by the time you're interviewing with us. But you know what? I will say we're as different in the questions that we ask as different as the interviewer. And even for those who apply in our second round, we do two Super Saturdays where we allow second-year students and sometimes alumni to go in and interview you. And I will say for the most part, at that point, there's something in that application that we see and we want to talk to you. We like you already. We want to like you even more. And this is a really great time for candidates to actually talk to us about things that may not be in their application. Actually, that's one of my favorite questions. Tell me something about yourself that I cannot find in this application. And that kind of helps us get another breadth or depth to this candidate and learn a little bit more about their passions. And frankly, at this point, too, it's also about the cultural fit in admissions. And you'll find that at most schools as well. Because at a certain point, we want to get that demonstration of initiative. We want to know that you're a team player. We want to know that you can articulate your goals and you can talk to us and have a conversation. And I'll tell you one thing that I do, Linda. I do not allow applicants to look at their resume when I'm talking to them. Sometimes they pull it out and I say, no, why don't you put that away and just tell me your story? We're just going to have a conversation. And sometimes I think they're a little surprised that I may not even ask them any questions from the applications and may ask them questions just to learn more about them as a person, because that's really what we're trying to learn at that point in time. So it can be fun. It can be fun.
Right. Like this call. What mistakes do you see applicants making?
Well, you know, over the years, you can see some of the same things happen from time to time. I think in the essay, you can almost tell when someone wrote an essay and really didn't have someone kind of review it for them, look at it. And I know that we have a lot of similar questions across schools. So there's that temptation to write an essay for one school, but then you forget to change the name of the school in the essay. I've also had someone send in an essay that was completely for another school because it wasn't even our essay. So you have to be a little bit more diligent and give us a little bit more details in that regard. And I think the other thing too is, you know, you want to talk to a person who's actually shown and demonstrated that they've done more research than just looking at the website. I'm surprised that sometimes candidates will apply to our program and they've never been on campus. They've never engaged with students. They've never tried to even engage with alums. And our websites and resources will give you that opportunity to connect with those folks to learn a little bit more about this program and the experience here. So I kind of feel sometimes when you're applying to a place blind, it shows that you're applying to a place pretty blindly. And that doesn't necessarily give us a good feeling that what your real interest in our program is. So.
Right.
So candidates definitely need to connect with folks so that when they are talking to us and when we do meet them, they can ask really good questions about our program and they can show us that they've done more in depth in their research than just read what's on the website.
Do you have any tips for waitlisted applicants?
Yeah, absolutely. This is that time of year, Linda, when the waitlist decisions are out and they're getting a little nervous. So the first thing I always tell waitlisted candidates, always contact the admissions team to find out, you know, is there anything that you can do in your application? Now, I will say this. Usually you don't give too much feedback at this time because you're still working with the class. You still have other applications and for us, other deadlines. But you can at least get an idea of some areas of your application that you can, what you can control that you can shore up for the admissions committee. So in the past, you know, we've suggested to people maybe retest to see if you can get a better score. Or, you know, Marshall does not accept letters of recommendation, but when you get the decision of waitlist, that is the time where you can send in a couple of letters of recommendations to supplement your application to give us another viewpoint on your candidacy. I will say this, being on the wait list, we know it's probably the toughest decision because if you have admit or deny, you have a definitive decision wait list. You're kind of in limbo.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee
purgatory.
You we're not trying to, yes, and we're not trying to keep you in limbo for a long period of time at all. We really want to get to a point where we can give you a definitive decision. But again, there's so many great candidates, sometimes it's just kind of hard to winnow it down. So I would say also let us know if anything changes throughout the time. If you retest, if you get a promotion on your job, let us know good things are happening in your life. And that can help you in the process as you go along. And just let us know you really are still interested in us. We don't assume that Marshall's the only school that you apply to. If you start hearing from other schools and you make other decisions, let us know that as well. That way we know what we're looking at in our pool.
With waitlisted applicants, do you want to know, let's say, if they need to hear from you? In other words, let's say they have a deadline where they have to put down a significant amount of money and they're waitlisted with Marshall. They would actually prefer to go to Marshall, but they don't want to give up the acceptance they already have and a deposit is required. Do you want to know that or do you just like prefer to pursue your process independently without knowing that?
We would definitely prefer candidates to contact us. Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to make a decision right away, because I think, you know, the savvy candidates know in this process, if you're applying to multiple schools, we're going to have multiple processes, multiple deadlines, and we can't always accommodate other schools' deadlines, nor do we. But that information just lets us know that, you know, maybe this is a candidate we should put some priority on. Maybe we should look at this candidate a little harder as we go into our continuous rounds of reviewing applicants. And again, it helps us know, too, that you truly are interested in Marshall, because I can tell you, I'm sure this happens at other schools. We have waitlisted candidates. Once we give them that decision, we never hear from them. So that to us, frankly, you're telling us you're probably not interested in Marshall anymore. But the ones who are will let us know that there's things going on in the process, and just keep us in the loop on anything that's happening outside of Marshall.
And I would assume also that if this goes without saying, but I'll say it anyways, because sometimes it clearly needs to be said, when somebody approaches you during the process, especially from the wait list, it's really important to be very courteous and respectful.
Of course.
It should go without saying, but, you know, sometimes it has to be said.
Well, you know, I'm sure we can all give you a couple of stories where it didn't work out as well. We always talk a little bit about the stalker stories, right? When we have that waitlisted candidate who's calling all the time, visiting all the time. You know, we had a candidate, I guess, who I feel like this candidate went and contacted every ambassador student and had every ambassador student write as a note about their candidacy. So, you know, we don't want you to go overboard. We don't want you to bombard us. But, you know, there's kind of that timing issue to just peek in every now and then and let us know that you're really still available and that you're still interested in Marshall. And again, there's no ranking, I will tell you, in the wait list. I get that question all the time. But that at least will put you at the top of our mind as we go back to review waitlisted candidates.
A little judgment goes a long way.
Absolutely. Okay. Everything in the application process is a judgment call. So
it's true.
We hope you're making good decisions out there.
What advice would you give to someone thinking ahead to a fall 2018 application to Marshall?
Well, Linda, the first thing I'll say, it's never too early to start visiting. It's never too early to start engaging with the admissions team, with students, with alumni, with people you know. So you can really start getting a gauge for the school, the program, the environment, and things like that. So it's never too early to do that. Usually by our new application usually will be up in July, and usually by early August we'll have our new class profile, so you get an idea what the average student looks like in the program. And then the major piece of the recruiting season starts in fall, so look out for our schedule so that you can come visit us at a city near you or in your own city, and sometimes on virtual platforms as well. Because the thing is too, the sooner you're kind of engaged and the more you're kind of in the minds of the commissions committee, we would be looking forward to seeing your application and seeing you submit, you know, your profile for the school. So we would look forward to that.
And the more they know about the school, the better they can show they belong there.
Absolutely. And you can do some pre-prep. We do have our essay questions on the website. So you can get an idea of the questions that we're going to ask in the application.
Now,
we
do change
from a time to Yes, that was what I was going to address for just next. They do change from time to time. I think the questions that we have now, we may tweak one or two, but it won't be such a major tweak that someone who starts an essay would not be able to make some adjustments in the process.
Okay.
So the ones we have now are a great guideline.
Let's go back to the program itself. What do you see coming down the pike for the MBA program at USC Marshall?
Well, you know, believe it or not, we're actually reviewing our curriculum this year. We review every 2 to 3 years and look at our curriculum. And I think what we're looking at, well, I can tell you what we're looking at right now, is kind of incorporating some more ways for critical thinking to be involved in the classes. And we're also looking for ways to get the classes a little bit more coordinated across disciplines so that students get not just a somewhat of a silo of each discipline, but learn it as they go so that when they start going into their projects and their capstone projects, they're already getting more of an overview of each of the subjects. We're going to shift some timing in it. You're going to still get the same amount of classes. You still need 63 credits to graduate. But what we realize is the front load was a little bit too front loaded. Some students thought the pressure was a little bit too tight. So we're going to kind of space it out a little bit, but you're still going to get a really in-depth, high-quality core here at Marshall before you start going into the elective classes.
Do you see more case study, giving them that multi-dimensional, multidisciplinary approach? Is that what I hear, or do you something else?
It may or may not be. Unfortunately, I couldn't answer that one right now. Okay. I think the students who get more involved in the case competitions will find a little bit more in depth in those areas at this point. But at this I'm not really sure at this point on that one.
Okay. Can you tell me, I know, again, you have said, and I know this myself, that entrepreneurship is really a big thing at Marshall. What's something really cool and entrepreneurial that a Marshall student or recent alum is doing?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's lots of little things going all around, but one of the things that actually comes to my mind immediately is we have an alum who is a uber outdoorsman, and he created a company called Beyond Gear, where you can buy outdoor equipment, rock climbing, all those wonderful things. But what's great about that company is every piece of equipment you buy, there's a piece of the proceeds that's donated to the favelas in Rio de Janeiro that allows a young person there to learn to rock climb or get involved in programs in their area to learn to be outdoors. So I think that's really fabulous. Yeah. And he's recently co-founded with another partner a new, actually, adventure hotel called A-Lodge. It's outside of Boulder, Colorado. So if you're an adventurous person, you can go up there to this cabin. You can stay at this hotel. You are right in the middle of the woods, so to speak. And you can spend your time rock climbing, mountain biking, all those wonderful things that outdoor people love to do. And it's one of the first of this kind that is solely and specifically for outdoor adventurers.
I found it. I Googled it. What was the first one called?
His other company is called Beyond Gear.
Beyond
Gear. So it's one word, Beyond Gear. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Link to it.
That one's kind of fun. But there's another one I think is actually kind of fun. I'll just talk to it briefly.
Sure.
But we have an alum who's also launched a subscription service for surgeons and nurses. It's called GibLib. And what this service provides to these doctors, nurses, residents is these 4K ultra HD virtual videos of actual surgeries. So that they can train on these. Although I will caution you, if you go to the website, you might see a few surgeries. So if you're squeamish, you might want to, hold off. You can't get too deep in it because you have to be a doctor or a nurse or a surgeon to do it. But it's really great because it allows them not only to train through these videos, they could observe what the OR looks like. They could observe what the team interactions are and watch the operations. And this student actually started this company while he was a student here.
Well,
so he started it and worked with the Lloyd Dye Center. Yeah.
Is he a doctor?
He's an alum now.
No, was he a doctor when he started this company or did he partner
with
physicians?
No, he was not. Yeah, he was not. He was not a doctor.
Okay.
But he just thought it was a great idea to get into the healthcare industry. He was in the healthcare industry, but he was not a doctor before.
Got it. Okay. Now, one of the things in preparing for the call was that kind of intrigued me was USC Marshall has a real broad menu, actually, of MBA options. It's full-time, it has part-time, online, EMBA, and it also has the iBear program, which is a very distinctive program. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Oh, sure. The iBear program actually was created. It's really for mid-career professionals. So these are folks that usually have 6 to 10 years of work experience. They may be a little bit beyond a regular full-time program, but they may not be quite ready for an executive MBA program. And they are usually looking for a one-year program because this program is pretty much internationally focused. So 75% of the students in this program are international students and only about 25% are domestic students. And so the profile really, the age range is around like 30, 32, 38, and of the students, especially the international students, many of them actually are sponsored by their companies because companies are sometimes looking for one-year programs or they are sponsored by their family companies to come. It is a straight 12-month curriculum. So you start in May and you go straight to May.
It's full-time.
So you graduate within a year. Yeah, it's completely full-time. Most of it is relatively lockstep. The students do get an opportunity to take 3 electives, but most of it is actually pretty laid out for them. And it's taught primarily by faculty that have a very extensive global expertise. It's a pretty small class, maybe about 55 students per year. And as I said before, about a third are sponsored. So it's really kind of a tight-knit network of students. It's called the IVAR students actually are very, very active. They're like a microcosm active alumni association, and it's actually very, very family oriented. Many of the students bring their families to the program. We actually have an IBEAR community in one of the apartment complexes out here that if you are a self-sponsored student, you can potentially get some funding if you wanted to stay in the IBEAR community, the residential community that they have. So it's a little bit different in that sense.
I assume that the full-time MBA programs, they live wherever they find housing, correct?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They pretty much live wherever in Los Angeles, although many of them are starting to live downtown since we're just south of downtown.
Right.
And downtown is a real downtown now.
Yes.
It's a favorite place. But the IBEAR students actually have a whole apartment complex where they subsidize students to stay there and become a really tight-knit community.
That's nice. What would you have liked me to ask you?
You know, Linda, I wish you had asked whether or not we had some milestones coming up at Marshall.
Do you have some milestones coming up at Marshall?
We have a big milestone coming up. My answer would be yes. So the incoming class, so the full-time class, which will be the class of 2020, will be graduating at our 100th anniversary of the School of Business.
Wow, that is a milestone. Wow. So
yeah, so we're excited about that.
So Marshall was founded in 1920?
Yes, it was the School of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
and it's since, of course, evolved into the Marshall School of Business. So there's planning and there are things going on that we will be celebrating our 100th anniversary as a business school on the USC campus.
Well, that's definitely a milestone and pretty exciting. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about USC Marshall?
Yes, they can go directly to the website, marshall.usc.edu, and they will find the menu that will send them to all the different programs that we have, not just MBA, but also master's programs.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll get a chance to just click on the ones that they need to find out more.
Okay.
And of course, they can always contact the admissions office at any time.
Sounds good. We'll include links in the show notes at accepted.com/255 to the site that Kelly just mentioned, as well as to related articles and show notes. Listener, thank you too for joining Kelly Scott and me for this, our 255th episode. If you found the show worthwhile, I have a suggestion for you. Tell your MBA applicant friends. They'll thank you, and so do I. Final word about our sponsor, which some of your friends may also be interested in. Get Accepted to Top MBA Programs with Low Stats is a free webinar to help you get accepted despite a less than stellar stat or two. Go to accepted.com/getMBA to register for this April 18th event. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.